We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart. Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an article in the Shropshire Star, read by Brian Perkins.
Sneak thieves rifled a guest's bedroom at one of Shropshire's most exclusive hotels, escaping with items worth over £400. They stole a jacket and shirts, the guest, and a £150 television.
Thanks to Colin Pettit of Telford for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Welcome first, please, on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. And on my left, Alan Corran and Steve Punt. And before we start round one, here's a cutting spotted in The Guardian by Yvonne Hugman of Merseyside.
The collection of exclusive wines was sold by a rich, middle-aged imbiber who has realised he will not live long enough to drink it all, although he's keeping 20,000 bottles back for himself, and for what Paul Bowker, Christie's head of wine, calls a fairly tight group of friends.
Francis, where did a packed house threaten to construct opposition?
Would this be Eastbourne?
It would.
The Lib Dems have been having some sort of confab down by the seaside, and Paddy Ashdown told them to go back to their constituencies and prepare for government, which is what they've been told for years and years, but this time he really means it. He's decided that... he's already, I think, sitting on various cabinet committees, and he wants a seat in the cabinet, and they're all palling up with New Labour. But some of the Lib Dem delegates weren't very happy about it, I believe. Is that right? You were there, I wasn't there.
Yes.
But I think this is true. And I think they've got a point, because... You know, if you wanted to vote for a party that was going to form a government, you wouldn't vote Lib Dem, would you? I think they know what they're doing, people who vote Lib Dem. They want a little party which will campaign on the issues that really matter, like hedgehog crossings on motorways and homing devices for supermarket trolleys that go missing, that sort of thing, which is what the Lib Dems have always done, and it's a useful function. And now they're going to go all boring and grown up and sit in cabinet and eat with a knife and fork and shave off their beards. Well, only the men, obviously. Those because the women might. But that sort of thing, they're going to be boring, aren't they?
Going to be.
It's nice, isn't it, that Ashdown's offered to help the government, given that they're struggling with this 176-seat majority. Coalition's just going to save their name. I miss, though, that Liberals used to be rather independent-spirited people, as Francis said, because they'd come on demonstrations, but they wouldn't want to take the placards, you know, from everybody else. They'd make their own ones with a ruler and inside-out Weetabix packet, and they'd write on it in a big blue marker pen Liberal slogans like, "Please stop this madness now, if at all possible." Which is a bugger of a chant to get behind.
This was the Liberal Democrat Eastbourne Conference. In his keynote speech, Paddy Ashdown told the membership to pursue the highest ambitions, but in the event they all voted to stay in the Lib Dems anyway. The main debate of the week centred around what Mr. Ashdown calls constructive opposition to the Labour government. He explained his cooperation implied no compromising of Liberal Democrat aspirations and assured them that in all his meetings at Number 10, he would firmly and forcibly extract from Tony Blair and his team exactly who takes milk and who has sugar. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, how might Margaret modify the minimum?
Am I right in thinking Margaret Beckett has said the minimum wage won't apply to people under 25, which is a terrible get-out, really, because the most underpaid people are people under 25. And so employers will say, brilliant, we'll take on people under 25 and then sack all those wrinkly 26-year-olds who stink of urine and fall over and break their hips all the time. What a loophole. I mean, just to say, well, we'll have a minimum wage, but it won't apply to anybody with a job. If they're going to go back on their election pledges, why don't they do what everyone wants and put taxes up and spend some money? That's what I call me old-fashioned, if you like.
It's the news that Margaret Beckett is seeking to exempt young people from the minimum wage. Mrs. Beckett hopes this will encourage them to stay at school rather than take badly paid, dead-end jobs, though they could always do both and become teachers. Critics fear the move will enable low-wage employers to exploit the young, which is terrific. It'll cut youth unemployment as a stroke, and what's more, we'll have lovely clean chimneys. 2 points there. Steve, whose party invitation might have got him some cards?
This would be our friend Haig, I presume. What seems to happen to the Conservative Party after the election was that they all developed post-traumatic stress disorder. All of a sudden, they went into severe shock, and they went around for months going, we lost, we got Blair's young leader, who's young, Conservative Party, who's young, hey, we're making leader, he's leader, we're winning again now. And then in the last few weeks, they've all gone, oh my God, what have we done? So to reassert his authority, Haig, with the aid of his Fionn, his fiance has called a ballot where he's asking them to back him or sack him, and they sent out 300,000 ballot papers, and they've done even worse than the Inland Revenue in the number that they've had back. they've had one third of them back, and the other two thirds have come back with things written on them like, this person's been dead 20 years, not living at this address or indeed anywhere.
When you asked Jeremy that question about Margaret and the minimum, I thought it was about Thatcher and Haig, because she's very upset that he's booked into this hotel with Fionn in a double room, and struck me that how sad it would be for Haig if he actually did agree and book in as Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and the desk clerk wouldn't challenge it because he didn't recognise him. And I thought, then it's even sadder, really, is that after all his long weeks in office as the leader of what is supposed to be a great party, the only thing we think of when we think of Haig is that he's shagging Fionn. It's very strange. It's the only single fact anyone could answer about it.
But he's just like Major, because if you remember when Major had a leadership crisis, he used to say put up or shut up, as if these were the only two alternatives on offer. And he then discovered that what they would do was not put up, but then not shut up either. And Haig said, back me or sack me. And what they're obviously going to do is not sack him, and then not back him either. They're just going to spend a happy 5 years grumbling very loudly.
Which... At least with Major, you didn't think of just one sort of sack. He didn't sort of come out in the morning smirking and have journalists ask him how the lovely Mrs. would be.
Asking how his compositing meeting went.
How's Norma? Oh, it goes like a train. I think he was, all things considered, he was a great man by comparison.
The Conservative leader, William Haig, has asked the Conservative Party either to back him or sack him. Tories, however, want to postpone the choice, so at least they'll have something to look forward to after the next general election. They seem very unimpressed with his only known policy, which is to wear a baseball cap at all times. Even worse is his bright shell suit, which disappointed kids who rush after him on his tours, asking how Dipsy, Lala and Poe are. And then a piece of music for you.
Oh, good. Bad little kid moved into my neighbourhood. He won't do nothing right, just been sitting down and look so good. He don't want to go to school and learn to read and write. He sits around the house and plays the rock and roll music all night.
And that was Bad Boy by the Beatles. Alan, who is getting tough on the courses of kids?
Ah, yes. This is the new government again. The principle of the new government is actually to punish anyone they can get their hands on. And because children lie, as most of our Scots parliamentarians would say, out with the law, because they're too young to be punished for anything, then parents are going to be held before the beak and thrown in chokey and fined.
Has anyone ever tried controlling children? It's impossible. Absolutely absurd proposal. But it's interesting that it's, if you look at society, it's middle-class children tend not to be quite the problem. It's children of the poor and of the rich are the most problem. And there's a similarity because they both go around huge estates with guns out of their minds on drugs.
Two points to Alan, so the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Jeremy 4, Alan and Steve 4. We start round two with an item spotted in the Newcastle-on-Tyne Evening Chronicle.
Builder Charles Davis laid the foundations for business success 30 years ago with £50 in the bank. Now he's worth millions. He said, I will stick with it for a few more years. I started with nothing. My wife, Brenda, has been a brick.
Thanks to Mr. J.R. Carment from Worcester for sending that in. Francis, who saw red at depiction of the emerald?
EastEnders.
Yes.
I believe it's some kind of species of soap opera, my lad, on the televisual apparatus. I don't know it myself. But they had a week of episodes from Dublin, I think, EastEnders this week, and caused a terrific fuss because apparently in one of these episodes a native of Dublin was shown being drunk. And the Irish government complained about this, said it was a great slur on the people of Dublin.
Do any EastEnders ever complain to the BBC about stereotyping?
It's all
sorted, my son. There's not a real human being in the whole of EastEnders, and you're led to believe that Wapping is all like that. Wapping is full of gentlemen working for Australians.
I met an Irish diplomat the other day who said that the thing that really bothered the 150 people who rang the Irish embassy was that the chap who gets the pint of beer poured over his head is also charged for it by the publican who poured it. And he said, that would never happen. He'd never charge you. If he poured the beer on your head, he wouldn't charge you for it. It's the row over the portrayal of Irish characters in EastEnders, which forced the BBC to publicly acknowledge that they'd got it wrong. It's the first time the BBC have broadcast an apology for a soap opera since the last edition of El Dorado. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, who's leaving home?
Edwina's leaving home.
She held a press conference to announce that she was splitting up from her husband, Ray, after umpteen years, and by an amazing coincidence, I mean, they decided this months ago, but she chose to announce it at a press conference launching her new novel, which in turn just happens to be called She's Leaving Home. And some people thought it might have been a publicity stunt, as if Edwina would do anything as cheap as that.
This is the news of Edwina Curry's divorce, which coincided with the launch of her latest novel, She's Leaving Home. She got the name from a Beatles song off the Sgt. Pepper album. On hearing she wanted a divorce, husband Ray replied in similar vein, breaking into a joyful chorus of, I've got to admit it's getting better all the time. She's still best remembered for the salmonella in eggs affair. It cost the British taxpayer millions of pounds and forced Mrs. Curry into a humiliating resignation, so at least it was money well spent. I'll give 1 point to Jeremy for that and say, Steve, here's your piece of music.
We're going to see some snooker now.
Britannia Rag by Winifred Atwell. Steve, who decided not to jack in the flag?
This is this sort of non-fuss about the new British Tourist Board logo, and they claimed they were going to drop the Union Jack out of it, and then they haven't, because they wanted something that would reflect modern-day Britain, cool Britannia. Apparently we're cool now, because cool rhymes with rule. It's very clever. They wanted something that would reflect British art and British culture and all that sort of thing. And they only had two entries for the competition. One was a picture of Jerry Spice sawn in half in a tank of formaldehyde. which was just wishful thinking, really. And the other one was just a Union Jack, but painted by someone who just had 8 pints of lager. And that's the one they've gone for. It's a kind of lopsided Union Jack with a splodge of orange and a splodge of green at the bottom.
And the after effects of the lager, I think, the green
exactly.
and orange.
Precisely.
Correct. 2 points. It's the British Tourist Authority's new logo, which, despite speculation to the contrary, does include the Union Jack, or, as we're supposed to call it, the Union Flag, for any sad pedants who might have tuned in hoping this was the moral maze. Alan, who furiously rode his way to court?
It's an 1847 act. And it's a man called Anthony something, on a bicycle in Cambridge. And he was charged with riding furiously, which I thought was wonderful. It's when I used to walk to Fleet Street from home in my fitter days, at the corner of Clerkenwell Road and Gray's Inn Road, there was a sign up, you may remember, because it's from the Guardian days, which said, Italian School of Driving. And I imagine it full of people learning how to use two fingers while they press the horn with their nose because they were groping the woman and drive through a traffic light at 90 miles an hour. And this chap was a bit like that. He went through Cambridge at 114 on an old midwife's rudge.
It's a cyclist called Tony Adams who was charged by Cambridge police under a 150-year-old bylaw which forbids furious riding in the town centre. When they stopped him in the early hours of the morning, the police claimed he was presenting a danger to ordinary decent citizens. He protested that the only people around at that time of night were students, but they decided to book him anyway. So the scores at the end of round two are Francis and Jeremy 7, but Alan and Steve just in the lead with 8 points. We start round three with a cutting from the Radio Times sent in by Mrs. Grace Foster from North Harrow.
The bad news is the Star Trek Voyager series finishes here. In this final episode, the crew realizes that they must pass through space that has been claimed by the Borg. To their horror, they soon discover that in the depths of space lurks something even more frightening. Aston Villa visit Anfield to take on Liverpool in live football.
Thanks to Mrs. Foster. Francis, what is more likely to be a chip off an old block?
This is to do with older men, mm-hmm. Yeah? Older men who marry young women are more likely to have a son as their first child. This has enormous consequences for civilization. And I don't know why. I don't know why this should be. I didn't quite understand the logic of it, but it's nothing to do with men getting more masculine as they grow older. That doesn't seem to have worked with Norman St. John's Thebes. But anyway, that's the that's the gist of it. I think.
What it is, young poor men married to older women are more likely to produce daughters, and old rich men married to young women are more likely to produce films.
Yes, the study was performed by the Population Biology Research Group. It went on to look at many famous older men, thought they had found an important exception in Bill Wyman and his 16-year-old girl, but she turned out to be his mother-in-law. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, some music for you.
Like the Chippewa, Iroquois, Omaha, like those Indians, I'm an Indian too. A Sioux, a Sioux, just like...
Jeremy, who was taken home to a happier hunting ground?
Long Wolf, who's an Oglala Sioux Indian chief who was found... in Brompton Cemetery, dead, buried, in fact, not just on firewater. He was found buried there, and some people thought, well, how does an Oglala Sioux Indian chief end up in Brompton? But then you might ask, how does an Islington schoolboy end up in Brompton? You might. I might.
It said in The Guardian that he danced with Buffalo Bill. I thought that was really a bit special.
Would have made Custer's last stand a bit. Anyway.
It is a bit weird. It took them... they didn't know where he was buried, and it took them 100 years to find where he was buried. Because surely if you wander through the average cemetery in West London, most of the gravestones say things like, here lies Margaret, beloved wife of Gerald, passed away. And then if you come across a gravestone that says, here lies Bald Eagle, chief of the tribe of the Sioux, you surely think, oh, right, he was from around here, was he?
This is the story of Sioux Indian chief Long Wolf, whose body was exhumed from a Fulham cemetery this week. Locals had no idea there was a Native American decaying on their doorstep, though they knew there were plenty of Native Australians doing exactly that down the road in Earl's Court. Steve, who was creatively over the moon?
This was a hilarious story about a new theory about how the moon was formed. They used to think the moon was a comet or an asteroid or something, and it came along to the Earth, got caught by our orbit and liked it and decided to stay. Enoch Powell briefly tried to send it home in the late 60s, but it stayed anyway. But in this new theory, it came along and it just hit the Earth and shattered into loads of little bits, and all the bits got caught in the Earth's orbit, and then eventually they all sort of formed back into the moon. Which sounds like an extremely dubious theory, really. Until you remember that until the early 80s, that was the way that the British car industry designed new models. They would just sling a load of old cars into a centrifuge and it would go round and round and round, and eventually there'd be an Austin Allegro in the middle.
Yes, indeed. 2 points to Steve Allen, who made a clean break after being treated like rubbish.
It was an amazing award. Oscar ceremony somewhere in the north. He was made Sweeper of the Year. It's a very strange sort of award, isn't it? I mean, he's road Sweeper of the Year, and he got sevenpence an hour. I suppose they just gave him the award for taking sevenpence an hour, but he asked for a pay rise. He wanted 21 pence an hour, which is 200%. So they gave him the bullet, and they gave him the heave-ho. It's a man called Keith Kirby. The name stuck. I may someday want that job myself, but it was... no one seems to have criticised the council for paying this poor bugger sevenpence. He was about 150, and he was Sweeper of the Year at 150, pushing his broom up and down for sevenpence.
Yes.
Lib Dem council, I suppose.
The answer is road sweeper Keith Kirby. For 2 years, he swept the Lincolnshire village of New Holland for £5 a week. As his employers explained, it may not seem much, but any job is better than walking the streets all day. His job has now been taken by a nurse who left the local NHS Trust. Obviously, she'll miss the patients, but the extra income will come in handy. So at the end of round three, Francis and Jeremy on 11, but Alan and Steve still 1 point ahead on 12. Francis, your piece of music.
I don't know how many times I have to tell you, Kevin, rats are wonderful, rats are marvellous. Thousands faint at my feet, world is my oyster, Kevin. Why? Because I'm full of showbiz glamour, aren't I? The world's first rodent superstar, yeah.
Francis, who was rapt when Roland took a ride?
I think this is British Airways.
Yes.
Who have just spent zillions of pounds repainting the tails of their planes with the thing that looks like the British Tourist Authority logo splashed about to improve their image, and forgot to clear the rats off the planes. And some people were about to take off when they noticed one scuttling down the aisle. There was some dispute about whether it was a mouse or a rat, but a rodent, an unidentified rodent, was on board. And the whole thing had to be aborted.
The thing that had really annoyed the rat, the only reason it got out of its seat to start with, was the same thing that it annoys everybody, which is the rat had phoned ahead and asked for the vegetarian meal and they brought it the chicken.
It's actually not the most annoying thing. What really got the rat was when it was checking in and the woman behind the desk said, "Did you pack your luggage yourself?"
BA Flight 54 from Johannesburg to London was cancelled this week after a rat was seen on board. The alarm was raised when passengers sensed they could smell rat urine, just coincidentally while they were serving the economy class hock-style Indonesian food. BA said they'd no idea how the rat ended up on a plane to Johannesburg as it had actually checked in for Hong Kong. Mice and rats are regularly spotted in the holds of aircraft, usually by handlers loading passengers' bags. Their standard practice is to kick them or jump on them, and they're not going to stop their fun just to chase a few rodents. Jeremy, on whose side of the fence is the grass definitely a green?
This is the bowling man. There's a man in Worcestershire who has, in the last few years, turned his back garden into a bowling green. And people think, oh, that's marvellous, that's like Field of Dreams. I'm rather suspicious of this man. At the age of 65, he mysteriously starts bowling for the first time. He digs up his back garden, pulls up all the grass, all the vegetables and all the borders, and then lays new turf. I wonder if various evangelists in Worcestershire have gone out to tell the good news about Jesus and never come home.
Steve, who went down in a rainforest bateau?
This was a splendid incident. The Oxford and Cambridge boat race crews were invited out to Brazil to take part in a sort of similar kind of event, but using the Amazon instead of the Thames, which is a great idea, because the Amazon contains crocodiles and piranha fish, which, if introduced into the Thames, might liven up the boat race a bit. And what happened was that both boats sank into the Amazon, and before they could be swallowed by the piranha fish, sadly they were rescued.
The Cambridge captain shrugged it off as sod's law, which we could all sympathise with, since we all tune into the boat race every year hoping for a jolly good laugh when one of them sinks, and then they both do it at once when nobody's watching. However, such incidents do bring out the very best in people, and as the rowers slowly sank into the piranha-infested river, their only concern was for the safety of their cocks. 2 points to Steve Allen, who turned to port and turned a blind eye.
This is about Horatio. Admiral Lord Nelson bought himself 375 gallons of port just 6 weeks before Trafalgar, with the exquisite timing of the British Navy. I think I actually bought it for a post-Trafalgar party. I mean, the invitations had gone out and all that, and he didn't think this bloke with a musket would be sitting in a crow's nest. He thought, they'll take pity of me, there's not much of me in it. He was only 4 feet tall, you know, Nelson. Four feet tall with about two limbs, one eye and a duff ear. Wanted to retire in the arms of Lady Hamilton and get his port drip up, 375 gallons of it, and didn't stand a chance. Frenchman got him and he died in the arms of Hardy. Hardy said, my God, your breath smells, what is that? A lot of port, actually. I didn't do any port in the storm, but then I didn't do Cox either.
He didn't invent anything, did he? Did he invent anything?
No,
he didn't invent anything. What, Nelson? Really.
He was an admiral, for heaven's sake.
All the other lords, but like Wellington invented the sandwich at the Battle of Cardigan, didn't they?
Raglan invented the edible sleeve.
Yeah.
In the middle of a gaming session. Bring me a sleeve, he said, and they brought him a ham sleeve. It's quite amazing. Montgomery invented male nudity, you know. That's why they call it the Full Monty. I think he only went to Waterloo for the footwear concession. I mean, if he'd lost, would we be wearing Napoleon boots? It's a wonderful thing. Wellies, you should give it a full nappy, we'd have to do. I think this ought to be pursued.
But he obviously only went to battle, old Nelson, to have these parties afterwards. He was only interested in the booze up. It was just a minor inconvenience. He put up this little sign beforehand saying, England expects every man to bring his duty frees.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from a feature in The Guardian called The Questionnaire, where celebrities of various kinds are asked probing questions about themselves. And this week's subject is Michael Parkinson, who is asked, which living person do you most admire? Geoffrey Archer, the greatest writer since Shakespeare. What is the trait you most deplore in yourself? Telling lies.
Jeremy.
This is from the Accrington something, but the bit of that tells you what paper has been cut off, and it's from Mrs. Sally Sutton. And it refers to the training course at Accrington's Asda store. During the course held in the store, they were taught a series of essentials for their job, including food handling, personal hygiene, and food poisoning.
Steve.
I've got a cutting from a Welsh local paper. It's a small ad from the jobs vacant column, and it says, part-time cocktail bar attendant wanted, male or female only.
Alan, have you been reading the Wagga Wagga advertiser again?
No, I have one from the Leicester Mercury, which a reader sent me. Says, Undertaker's assistant, Geoffrey Pollard, 28, was given a suspended 6-month sentence in order to pay £200 compensation, after a woman attending a funeral service at Shalgrove Crematorium noticed that he was wearing the suit her father was supposed to have been buried in 6 months earlier.
Now let's look at the final scores. Francis and Jeremy, 15, but Alan and Steve, just this week's winners, with 16 points. And before we leave you, here's an advertisement from Caravan magazine that's been sent in by John Avenson from Wilston, Hertfordshire.
The Wastemaster, a strong dual-purpose waste carrier, takes wastewater and toilet cassette to the disposal point in one trip. Unique carrying platform for cassette and bottom emptying outlet.
That's all for this week. Till the next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy and Steve Punt. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft. The producer was John Rolfe.